What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of comic books that have come out this very week. We review them for your ears, not your mouth.
Just get them out of your mouth.
Stop sticking this podcast in your mouth, guys.
Close your mouth when you're listening to this podcast.
Yeah, there you go. You're catching flies, buddy.
Yeah, open your eyes, your ears, and your buttholes. Let's begin.
Open your eyes, don't catch no flies. That's what we always say here on The Stack. Let's jump into it with our first comic book based on the hit movie Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey number one from DC Comics. This is by two people I've never heard of before. It's written by Amanda Connor and Jimmy Pamiotti. The art is by Amanda Connor, and the colors are by Paul Mounts. This is a Black Label take on the book.
It's very flirty.
But let's be honest. This is like exactly what they've been doing with Harley Quinn, but they get to uncensor their fucks, is basically what it is.
Finally.
Which is, I think, absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, this is a really great issue. The art's fantastic. Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti have been spending a lot of time with this character, and it shows. They do a great job with this character. It's a fun story and right in the wheelhouse that they've kind of been setting up.
Yeah,
this feels like maybe one of the best uses of the Black Label that we've seen, where it's not just unnecessarily like, look at this big old ween. Instead, it's like stuff that
At home, Justin actually pointed to his ween.
Exactly. Well, you know what I said about
it. We should also mention pantsless right now.
Exactly.
Nope.
Hey, I knew I was going to say
sorry.
This.
Pete is totally dude.
So this feels very, very a natural extension of the character, and I think it is very fun, very well done.
Yeah.
My favorite panel was the. It was like the crab trying to hold on to
one of these super fun things that Amanda Connor does throughout this book is she does like ludicrous teasing nudity. I think it's probably on par with The Pro if you ever read that book back in the day. But it's exactly like the gang of Harleys come up to the roof and all of them are conveniently covered by Harley Quinn's knees because she's sitting cross-legged. It's very funny. There's so much that happens in this book, too. I think it's about 38 pages long.
Yeah.
And it basically concerns Harley going back to Gotham.
After not breaking up, but getting in a fight with Poison Ivy.
Yeah, right. Because she didn't drop the anchor in the boat, which is
exactly.
It's enough to make anybody super pissed.
Classic seafaring mishap.
But it's all the stuff that they've been working on regularly with the title. It doesn't miss a beat. If you like that, it's so fun, and it's kind of the perfect tie-in with the movie. Like, just they're two obviously very different things, but Pete and I were just talking about this. That really channels the chaotic energy that Pamiotti and Connor put in their book anyway. So it's... Normally, I'm a little iffy about these books that they put out so you can walk into the comic book shop after you see the movie.
Right.
But this is great. This is, you can just walk in, pick it up. So much fun.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
So good. All right. Next one to talk about from Marvel Comics, another lady lead, Nebula number one, written by Vita Ayala and art by Claire Rowe. This is taking Guardians of the Galaxy as resident bad girl and spinning her off into her own series.
Okay.
What'd you think about this?
I know, I see that. That's why I was like, oh, Pete's not going to answer. So I guess I will form some thoughts.
Yeah.
I'm curious what the intention here is. Nebula is a sort of a hero, but sort of a villain. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to tell where this is going to land. The reveal at the end of the issue for where the series is, I think, is probably setting her up to be more of a hero.
Yeah.
I think we could have started there. Like, I didn't... a lot of the stuff that happened, I was like, what? I don't know any of the background here, so I don't know what...
I think we're kind of just jumping into it. It's Nebula being a horrible person, stealing this piece of technology called the All-Seer that essentially gives her, like, I don't know, Matrix abilities, basically. She can check the odds, she can work ahead of people, and things, of course, get screwed up by the end. We won't spoil the cliffhanger necessarily, but I like this issue as a standalone Nebula tale. It's funny, while I was reading it, my daughter came into the room and was like, oh, is that Nebula? And I said, yeah. And she's like, oh, is she a good character or a bad character in this? And I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure.
It does do a good job of treading that line. and landing somewhere new.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Justin. First off, the art's amazing.
Art's great.
Storytelling. I just don't know enough about Nebula to care yet or to know where she stands on things. It's just her being awful, and it's like, oh, I'm not really into this. But hopefully as this series moves forward, we get kind of a better Nebula.
I think I'm a little more positive than you guys. I thought it was a solid first issue. It was fun and nasty in the right way for Nebula. Mm. It feels like Vita Ayala really nails the delivery that Karen Gillan has in the movies.
Right.
So if you've watched Guardians of the Galaxy or the Avengers stuff, I think you could pick up right here and get into it because it feels like that. And I am really curious to see because it's a very different status quo in the second issue.
Can you imagine Marvel doing like an anti-hero and people like...
Maybe that would be crazy.
Be crazy. Like a hero that like maybe shoots people.
Oh, no, that's too far.
Yeah, it's too far.
Yes, nobody would like that.
Nobody would like that. Nobody in this room.
Let's move on to a Boom Studios book, Alienated, number one, written by Simon Spurrier, illustrated by Chris Wildgoose. And I did want to call these out in particular, colored by Andre May and lettered by Jim Campbell.
Great call out.
The reason I wanted to call those out in particular, so the idea of this book is three characters all with basically the same name walk into the woods, discover an alien artifact, and it links up their brains. And that's kind of where things start in the first half of the book. But two of the things that I loved about this book in particular, beyond the fact that Simon Spurrier always likes a good, weird sci-fi book, is each of the characters has their own color palette that plays out throughout the book, and the lettering plays out in such a specific and important way throughout the book so that you can tell not just what characters are saying, but also their thoughts. It's such a good, complete package across the board.
I really like this book. I thought not only was the art amazing, but the story was so different and creative and new. I thought they did a great job of setting up this world, sucking you in, and completely wanting more. I can't wait for more.
Yeah, I agree with you, Alex, about the lettering especially. I was like, oh, this really feels like how people, especially young people, talk and interact with each other with sort of the overtext and the undertext happening simultaneously. I really like this as well. It was great. The colors were great, and it reminded me of like the Breakfast Club-y sort of kids from different worlds coming together and being inside each other's heads. Very fun.
One of the plot decisions that I really liked in this book in particular was that they get this alien thought link and then they go to school anyway.
Yeah.
And that to me feels like a very teen, okay, this crazy thing happened. Let's just roll with it and see where it goes.
I'm not going to be skip school.
Right.
Mom will be mad.
Yeah. Kids never skip school.
That's right.
They love
I certainly never did. Perfect attendance.
What about you, Pete?
Skipped all the fucking time.
Oh, we got a badass. Okay.
Bad to the bone.
Oh, wow. Okay. How many cigarettes are you smoking right now?
Well, you know what? You're going to smoke the entire pack until you get sick, Pete.
Cool. Yeah. Put down those skateboards and let's hang out with a cool guy.
This is a great book. Alienated number one from Boom Studios. Next one from Marvel Comics. Gwen Stacy number one, written by Christos Gage and art by Todd Dock. This is going back in time, showing the old Gwen Stacy as she gets set up to solve a business.
Yeah, she was the real hero, maybe.
Yeah.
Just like everybody thought.
So here, I'm just going to throw this out there. Christos Gage, always good. Todd Dock, always good. Mm-hmm. This feels perfectly in line with what a Gwen Stacy comic book would be. I just don't know who asked for this.
Right. Well, especially in light of Spider-Gwen and all of the Ghost Spider, the way Gwen Stacy has been used in other parts of the Marvel Universe right now is so great. I really loved the Ghost Spider series that just wrapped up like earlier this or last year, I guess. So this feels like a wildly different take that doesn't have any of that fun of seeing her actually be a hero and be a superhero. But to your point, Alex, I think the writing is really good here, and I really like this version of Gwen Stacy. So I would pick up a second issue of this just to see where it goes.
Yeah,
the art's fantastic. Some fun storytelling. My favorite part is when you saw Peter Parker studying in the library.
Because you were like, dork. Smoke a cigarette, dork.
No, I was like, well, oh.
Just to mention, time-wise, this happens right after Uncle Ben is killed, so Peter Parker and Gwen Stacy don't really know each other too much yet. She's dating another guy who's not Harry Osborn or anything like that.
So she's going to a different school.
Right, so it's a very different status quo than we're used to with Gwen Stacy. Also, obviously, Captain Stacy, Jean DeWolf, etc., are alive, which is a lot of fun. This is a weird note, and I don't think this is necessarily a good criticism, but the covers by Adam Hughes are so good.
Yeah.
And so Norman Rockwell Americana, I wish the title had leaned to that a little bit. Like, I would have read almost an Archie comic about Gwen Stacy.
Oh, that's a great idea.
That would have been a lot of fun.
Pete, let me ask you, was it weird seeing the inside of a library since you skipped school so much?
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's what that looks like.
Won't see me in there, Principal Skinner.
Skinner. Yeah, I just, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Some people really
up in Springfield.
Yeah, some people really love Gwen Stacy. She wasn't my favorite character, so this book isn't really for me. But
she's like your second favorite character, right?
No.
You like Spider-Man to be single.
No.
Yeah, your second favorite character of all time is what I'm talking about.
No.
You like Spider-Man to be
with. Your first favorite character, Foggy Nelson. Second favorite character, Gwen Stacy.
Exactly.
Nope.
The Unpowered Sidekick Club.
Right.
Your second favorite, or your second favorite character is Mephisto. Or that's, who do you like Spider-Man to be with, Mephisto or Gwen Stacy?
You know the answer to that. It's MJ.
Mary
Jolie.
Michael Jordan? Oh my God, Pete, what are you talking about?
Yeah, Peter Parker always loves a dude who can slam dunk.
Exactly.
That's what he said.
Catching some air.
That's what Uncle Ben, his famous phrase was, go out with a guy who can slam dunk.
It's true. Wow.
With great power comes
great
slam dunk
ability.
Anyway, so that's our review of Gwen Stacy number one. Moving on to a DC comic, The Green Lantern Season 2, number one, by Grant Morrison, art by Liam Sharp. This is continuing the story they were telling, obviously, in Season 1, but also
obviously
in Green Lantern Black Stars, which was the bridge series between these two.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
is a very easy issue to recap.
Oh, my God.
For instance.
This, as usual, is so bonkers, and Green... So, Hal Jordan is back with the Green Lanterns. And right at the beginning of the book, the Guardians are like, great job, Hal. We have to go forever now.
Yeah. Well, we should mention it's written by Grant Morrison.
Yes, it's written by Grant Morrison, who I feel like I'm starting to be onto his game a little bit, which is like,
wow.
Take a word and add ing or something else to the end of it, and then it becomes a crazy word. Or take two words and jam them together, and then become a crazy word.
Wow.
So that everything is like, well, here's normal speech, but then I'm going to filter it through adding a bunch of crazy words in there.
It is fun the way he writes. Hal Jordan gets a fun award. Then he gets partnered up with, I want to call him Salt Gumby. who he then goes to find new guardians.
I thought it was Glass Gumby.
He later said that he was made of salt.
Yes, he's crystal.
But he uses him like he's a prism of glass, you know?
Yeah.
You could do that with large salt.
Yeah. Can you ever have large salt?
Yeah.
Oh, it's next to,
there's kosher salt. Well, there's regular salt, table salt. There's kosher salt, which is a little larger, sea salt, and then Gumby salt.
A lot of people buy salt in the tiny, like, sand. I buy one big one and just chip it off.
That's smart.
Exactly. That's smart. Buy in bulk.
Yeah.
I have a deer at home who licks it off for me.
That's good. That's weird.
I don't know where you fit that in your apartment.
I will say...
New York, baby.
He lives
New York, not known for... having deers in the apartment.
Baby.
Like, why do you say that? Like,
hey.
Explains it. Does no, not.
Haven't hey. You ever the Christmas story? The Santa Claus, all the deer from Brooklyn.
Yeah,
on Dasher, on Dancer.
That's reindeer, completely different than regular deer.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
No one's ever said that.
Right. They're deer that have been stuck out in the rain for a while.
Oh, Mr. Big Time deer. Dropping knowledge on us, never even went to in school the, a day in his life.
We learned about Christmas every fucking day
exactly.
in my school.
Alex knows all about Christmas.
I do. Bunch of wet deer living in Brooklyn, folding pizza just like this. Hey.
Hey, Comet, hand me a slice of good pizza, because we live in Brooklyn, New York.
I'll have a bagel
in
return.
Don't hand me a slice of bad pizza. Hand me the good pizza. Because we have both here.
Butson, you want to take a cab to a Broadway show? New York City.
Oh, my God. Oh, boy. boy. So that's Green Lantern.
I will say the, yes. the premise that this ends on of like Hal Jordan and Salt Gumby have to hang out with Teen Guardians. Yeah. That's fun.
That's not the concept, though.
It's a neighbor.
I love the middle. I'll tell you what. Like, there is... Same as I'm on to Grant Morrison, I feel like it's just it wears you down by the middle of the book where you're like, well, this is crazy. I'm and clearly tripping balls right now. And
well,
I'm having a great
feel
time.
Like this isn't as crazy as Grant Morrison usually goes. I feel like this is more tame.
He introduced a character named Mother who creates the Guardians out of seeds, and she's making new Guardians who are young Guardians. They take over,
they
like, yo. I know this has happened 45 million times in the past 5 years, but you Green Lanterns are fucking up. Hal Jordan, you suck worst of all. Get yourself turned.
After he just won an award.
He just won an award.
I do think the art really matches Grant Morrison's writing. In that it's very like 1970s so vibe. It's trippy. I think it's cool.
Well, I think that's what they're going for, right? Like they're going for, as usual with Grant Morrison, he's going for like, I read 1 million Green Lantern comics yesterday while I was high on cocaine. Yeah. Here are all of them. And it's great. Like if you're looking for that, you know exactly what you're getting into, which is you don't know exactly what you're getting into.
Yes.
And that's fun. Cool. All right. Let's move on and talk about Pete's second favorite character appears in this issue. Mother of Demons, number one from Marvel Comics, written by Ed Brisson and art by Roland Boschi or Boschi, maybe? I don't know.
Like
one
the
of the
TV
two.
Show Bosch.
So this is spinning off the current Ghost Rider run where I keep messing them up. Danny Blaze?
Johnny Blaze.
Johnny Blaze.
Is the king of hell.
Wow.
Danny Ketch,
I
want to say.
Keep them straight.
Danny Ketch is... has some weird power from the limbo where he gets a sword.
Right. So this is mostly in the first half of the book focusing on Lilith, the mother of demons, and her plans to take over hell. Then it very abruptly pivots to focusing on Daddy Tetch and what's going on. Actually, it
Johnny
focuses
Blaze.
On Johnny Blaze first,
yeah.
Then Daddy Tetch.
Ketch.
It almost felt like three stories in one issue.
Yeah.
It did feel
that?
Disjointed. I will say, though, I like this world. The like battle for hell is a fun area to be in.
Well, what do you think about this? You got to see your boy Mephisto a little bit of this book.
Yeah,
I like Ghost Rider, you piece of shit.
Mephisto living in Vegas, your favorite city.
Okay, so would you put Ghost Rider like number three after Gwen Stacy and Mephisto?
You guys are both assholes. So I like this book. I think it's not only is the art amazing, but it's this cool kind of battle for hell that we're kind of going through. I like the, you know, they're doing a little bit of like moving pieces on a board, but because it's split up into three different stories, I don't mind it as much. I feel like they did a good job of accomplishing a lot, but giving us enough action where it's very entertaining and worth the price of admission.
This, and obviously it's almost a one-to-one, but it very much feels like it's channeling Lucifer Sandman to me. Like it feels... the closest you're going to get a mainstream Marvel book to being like an old school Vertigo book.
Oh, yeah.
Just because of all of the moves that they're making in hell. And they have a thing where Jack-O-Lantern and, oh my God, what's his name? The jacked religious guy who...
Hellstrom? Damon Hellstrom?
No. There's a dude who's like, I'm righteous and I shouldn't be here in hell. I'm blanking out his name.
Oh,
it's like
Reaper's...
Preacher, it's not Preacher, it's something like that.
Yeah.
But there's this whole thing where the two of them just keep fighting their way out of hell.
Hulk Hogan,
yeah. The Hulkster. And Ghost Rider just keeps pushing them down. That to me felt like, oh, that would be an entire issue of a Vertigo book.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a great call.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. The Ghost Rider title in general is very good. Last one we're going to talk about, I assume this must be a hard one for you, Pete.
Yeah.
Curious to get your thoughts first. This is Batman Pennyworth RIP number one from DC Comics, written by James Tynion IV and Peter J. Tomasi, art by Eddie Barrows and Eber Ferreira, Chris Burnham, Marcio Takara, Diogenes Neves, David LaFuente, and Sumit Kumar. And this is... taking place after a tribute to Alfred Pennyworth, who is dead, as the Bat family remembers him and tells different stories of their time with him. Pete, your reactions, please.
I really love this. I loved how chaotic the Bat family is because Alfred was the linchpin that held them all together. I loved what kind of unfolded and how everybody got to kind of tell off Bruce Wayne, basically, tell him to go fuck himself, and he's got to grow up. But I also loved how powerful it ended and like how moving it was. This was a really great issue of comic books, and I can't believe that Alfred is still dead. I'm still in shock, and I don't want to believe it, but this was a really an amazing comic.
I feel that way about the dinosaurs. I can't believe they're still dead.
What was your reaction, Justin?
I think I speak for both Pete and I when I
say that. Well, birds are still dinosaurs, so they're, you know, they're still around. Crocodiles.
Do you know how many birds are dead, dude?
Yeah.
Like most of them.
Well,
in throughout history?
Crocodiles keep eating them.
That's right. Yeah. And pirate hands. I think I speak for Pete and I when I say Alfred Pennyworth is worth a lot more than a penny.
Yeah.
And I think we learned that in this issue.
Yeah.
I didn't like how mean they were to Bruce Wayne.
What are you talking
about?
All
the Bat family was just like, he's grieving harder. He knew Alfred raised him. It's like if his father died, after the fact that his actual father died, they're just so harsh to him. And sure, I understand they're angry because he was on vacation with Catwoman for like,
yeah,
when
he's.
But it doesn't matter. He's still grieving. I felt like, and I did like the issue a lot. I was just like, everybody's going to slag him off and then walk out the door.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that as a format and a structure for the story, I liked that, but it felt wildly harsh. For the Bat family always comes back together, and this issue ended with none of that happening.
Well, and I think that's why, to me, it felt like an interim part of the story of what's going to go on, because I agree with you. It did seem way over the top. I was also, just based on the fact that I've been reading the main Batman titles, but I haven't been really reading anything about Nightwing or Red Robin, I was like, what's going on with
Nightwing? They did a great job of like keeping everything that's been going on in this book.
I agree. I think I don't know what's happening in Nightwing either, it used to be one of my favorite books. The Rick Grayson stuff put me off in that title, but I actually liked it here.
Yeah.
The idea that he was like, this Alfred guy seems fun.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I've lost my memory.
Yeah.
Can I get a drink?
Do you know what it was? Because there was definitely another issue, and I'm blanking on what it was. It might have been when Bruce Wayne died.
Yeah.
Where the Bat family got together and eulogized him. And this reminded me of that a little bit, where that was everybody being like their iconic roles telling these iconic stories. And this to me was like, this is nothing against the writing or the art or anything. Like, I kind of hated the fact that we have this poignant, important thing happening with a crucial member of the Bat family, and two of them, or at least two, if not three, maybe Jason Todd as well, are these bonkers places in their continuity that just they're like, I'm not really in this.
Yeah.
You know?
It also feels like Rick Grayson is out Jason Todding Jason Todd. So yeah. It's just inherently a little out of balance.
That's it. It just kind of, and I think this was purposeful in the writing, but it threw me off balance when I was reading.
I think you both are wrong. This was really well done.
I'm not saying it's... I liked it.
Yeah.
I just think they're mean to Bruce.
Yeah. Right. Well, and sometimes I'm saying it threw you got to be mean to the people that you love, all right?
That is not accurate, and that's a main problem that you have.
not true.
Also, things could be good, but they could bother you at the same time, Pete.
Yeah. Zalbin.
Wow.
Wow, interesting.
This is really
so when I, at my funeral, I'm dying first, even
okay,
though I'm the youngest and the tallest. I do think that I'd like...
Well, tall people are...
I'm taller than
he is taller.
We've tested this for over
years. The taller you are, the sooner you die because you're closer to heaven.
That's 100% true.
That's how it works.
That's what my priest always said.
Yeah. What?
What?
Don't worry about it.
Long story.
Yeah.
I'm going to get dragged straight to hell.
Rabbi, right?
Yeah. Secret Catholic over here.
Get to your bullshit point.
Thank you.
Don't tell me
die first.
I yield my time. No, I was just saying when I die first, I want you to slag off Alex and then walk out the funeral.
No problem.
I'm going to be wearing cool shades the entire time and be like, I'm sorry, I don't remember you, dude.
Cool.
So that'll be pretty sweet. Well, anyway, Alfred Pennyworth dead forever for the rest of continuity. And
I really hope that's not true.
I look forward to the next issue where Bruce Wayne's interviewing new butlers.
Yeah. No, I think what's going to happen the next issue is Lazarus Pit.
I mean, no. Here's the thing.
A butler, you just get a new butler.
Fuck
butlers
you.
Die all the
Dude,
time. You just get a new
one. You're an awful
Did you
person.
Watch Watchmen? Butlers die all the time.
Butler,
constantly.
Yeah. You fling them into space and get a new butler. That's how it works. That's the butling game, dude.
No, it's not.
Here's the thing is that, like, I mean, no inside knowledge here, but they've clearly hinted that they have a crisis is coming again. It may not be this year. It's probably going to be the next year or the year after that.
Didn't they recently call it a triple crisis or something?
Yeah, something. That was in the Green Lantern book. Yeah. They were referred to a triple crisis, but they're going to do a universe reboot. It's been a couple of years. So, like, killing Alfred, revealing Superman's identity, all of these things, they can make these big moves now and make them be permanent. Because the universe is going to reboot.
Well, you sound tired when you say that.
It's just better because this is bullshit. You can't have Batman without Alfred. It just doesn't make sense.
I can't wait for the
Alfred
verse.
Ooh, yeah. What if they reboot the universe and Batman's fucking dead and Alfred's the only one around?
Yeah. Great. Or Batman's the butler and Alfred's the hero. That's what I want.
I want to see an issue where Alfred and Gwen Stacy get together and says, now it begins.
Now it's our
that
turn.
Can't happen.
I'd yes, love to see can. Them date. I ship them.
They should date. They should date.
DC and Marvel don't cross over. You know that.
Yes, they do.
Gwenifred. I ship Gwenifred.
You're horrible.
Stacy word.
Ooh, that's much better.
Thank you.
If you'd like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater Loft in New York. Come on by. We will chat with you about our top three comic book characters of all time. A couple of things we want to plug before we go. Pete.
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on our live show, you fucking piece of shit.
Jesus.
That's not part of our social media plan, Pete. Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live, you fucking lovely motherfuckers.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more, you stupid, dumb pieces of shit.
What? Don't
also,
say that.
You said that.
I wasn't talking about our.
I know, but you didn't specify.
Who listen
I was
at
just
home.
Going with what you said. You
don't
started
call
insulting
the listeners
our listeners.
That.
I was just following you and trying.
You know what?
You.
I hope everyone
you're the leader of this podcast.
You.
You're the leader of this podcast.
Thank you
I
for
follow you
admitting
anywhere,
that.
Including insulting our audience. I feel so bad about it right now, though.
You did.
iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe. And we'll see you at the comic book shop.
And remember, kids, stay out of school. And